And good afternoon. Welcome into Market Talk for Wednesday, February 24th, 2021. And a good afternoon to you. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Great to have you here with us. MarketTalkAg.com. That is our home on the web, MarketTalkAg.com. Find us Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. It's all at Market Talk Ag, our great radio affiliates. You can find a list of them on our website as well. And of course, links to all of our streaming platforms that we are on, including iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and much more. You can watch the video and audio version, of course, on YouTube and on our website, and listen to the audio version on any of those streaming sources I mentioned, along with many others. We got a lot to talk about here today with the grain markets and livestock, an update across the board. And here to join us and talk about all of it, our good friend Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics joins us. And Mike, good afternoon. And you know, I think we broke the curse. You and I get to talk about higher prices again today, Mike. It is an upturn on a Wednesday.
You know, the viewer and listener didn't realize that last week we did it on a Thursday on purpose, Jesse, just to break the curse. And we did. We had a risk on Wednesday, first one probably in 3 months or since we've been doing our show together. Mm-hmm. Big deal, I think, was the housing numbers. And, you know, it's hard in a commodity program to talk about housing numbers and try and connect the dots to say that's part of the risk on trade that we saw, this risk on Wednesday, as I would call it. But I do think that the market is in search of inflationary data. We've had a lot of Fed speak. The Federal Reserve Chairman has been in front of the Senate yesterday, in front of the House today. A lot of people talking inflation. The Texas natural disaster that's turned into an economic disaster we touched on last week, that too is starting to create a lot of inflationary pressures. And we saw it in the weekly energy data with some of the lowest refinery numbers as far as capacity utilization that we've seen in many, many years. We dipped below 70% refining capacity in this last week's data by Department of Energy. But then, as I said, housing starts kind of kicked off the inflationary bug today, and we saw a really nice, I think, 4.3% increase in January. They revised December from about 1% to over, I believe it was, a 5.5% increase in December housing starts. So when you start talking houses and then that kind of thing, you start thinking the jobs are secure. You think wages maybe will start to at least firm, if not increase. And I think that really was the genesis of why we were able to find so much follow-through buying in the markets, along with some supply-demand features.
Definitely. And I think all those housing numbers, and you throw in some of the other numbers we got today, including ethanol, we saw, I know the Dow turned aggressively higher here around midday after those housing numbers came out. We got a few different things in the marketplace, the bullish weather from South America, a lot of things really fueled this market today. Mm-hmm. And I think let's break this down. Let's start first, let's start with the corn side, that ethanol report. We expected it to drop lower. It did. And I saw somebody say maybe the biggest drop on record. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but I mean, corn held up pretty nicely today. Some moderate strength there. You look out some of those new crop contracts, corn really looked strong today. Not as strong as beans and wheat, but still a very solid day in corn.
Yeah, I mean, this is where I think the story, other than the ethanol, and I'll hit that real briefly, but the 28% drop in production probably was near a record for 1 week. It is very hard to slap a 30-year production down in 1 week, but it made sense given that we have these natural gas issues from what happened in the South and in the High Plains all the way down to the Southern Plains. And what we're finding out at this point is that gas heads, well heads, natural gas well heads physically froze shut. They may be damaged to the point where we've got to come in and change those out so that they work again. That could take weeks. We're also finding out here in Kansas, even as far north as Nebraska, and certainly us here in Kansas, we're part of kind of a consortium for the natural gas supplies. And I am hearing out of media people in Topeka, in Wichita, in Kansas City, that this natural gas price spike we saw as a result of these wellheads getting frozen, a person that paid $100 in heating bills last month could be up to $2,500 this coming month. That type of price explosion in terms of your bills is a cost push inflation. It's not the good kind of inflation, but right now the market doesn't care about it. And that's something to really hold on to as we go down the pike here the next couple, 3 months. This is the type of inflation that makes me nervous as we get into planting and post-planting, because it's not that demand-led, demand-pull inflation, as the old-timers used to call it. But going back to the corn and kind of moving away from the ethanol side of the equation, I think the real story in corn continues to be South America. We've heard a lot about the soybean harvest being delayed, quality issues being an issue. But the real story to me is that second crop corn is not getting in the ground. At the pace they're at right now, Jesse, they probably won't make 50% complete as we get into the first week of March. Next week, and in the end of end of the first week of March, when they should be 100% done, I would be surprised to see them get 50% done, because Mato Grosso is the Safrina corn province to really watch. It's the big kahuna when it comes to that second crop corn, and it is getting rain after rain after rain, and there's more on tap for the next 5 days. So corn really, to me, is the sleeper still. It looks the best technically. It has the strongest support underneath it. And I'm hearing from clients back east that they're raising ethanol bids, not lowering them. So the futures is rallying, plus they're increasing the basis. So I think the corn is essentially running on all eights right now, and that South American issue is not really going to go away anytime soon.
Now, we've talked about this quite a bit on the show, and I've been hearing more and more from people really kind of sounding the horn that if you're looking at doing any marketing, whether you have some old crop corn still left or if you're looking most likely at a new crop, to get some protection underneath you and set a floor with where this market is at right now. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think with all due respect, a lot of people have stopped trying to pick highs in this market, and it's a fool's errand to try and pick highs and pick lows in these markets and commodities, especially with the fundamentals that we have, that we know about, that uncertainty. And then there are fundamental uncertainties we don't even know about yet that could really impact these prices. Why? Because stocks are tight and the currency markets are not in a deflationary mindset. So The world has turned upside down since last August. And, you know, people can say that the Iowa derecho was a big deal, and it was. But it really, to me, the genesis of the whole market turnaround in commodities was when the Federal Reserve came out in early August, late July, and said, we're not raising interest rates. We don't care if inflation goes above our target. And that's what they said. And I think the financial market, people like me and like the people on Wall Street, were like, hey, this could be a late 1970s early and mid 1970s to early 1980s scenario where this cost push inflation could really do some damage. Real assets are something I should probably get a hold of.
Let's move over to the soybean complex here, Mike, and bean oil, canola, you name it, palm oil. We've seen a surge in those markets here the last couple of days, and bean oil here today reaching levels we haven't seen since 2013. I know we had some fund buying in the bean oil market today, but really it just seemed like the soy complex has been the driver here the last couple of days in this market, and we've been testing some of those contract highs in soybeans again. What are you taking away from this surge in bean oil and the soy complex in general right now?
Yeah, generally speaking, over the course of the last 25 or so years that I've been doing this, Jesse, I just don't like bean oil-led markets. I really like meal-led markets. I like the fact that the bean meal was able to hold key support, but that January low that you and I have talked about before of $417.60 a ton, that's a big number to me. We take the January low out, that's probably one of the best indicators to suggest that this market's probably done for a while as far as going higher. So bean oil-led market's nice, but I sell into it typically, and that's what I did. I recommended the last 10%. Kerry recommended the last 10% of 2020 soybean hedges, cash sales, and also the last 10% of the 2020 corn sales for the cash market earlier this week. We didn't catch the high. We don't want to catch the high because we put our clients in front of the pattern of the shotgun pattern too much, and put them too much in a tough spot potentially. But the good profit nonetheless. The soybeans for me, other than the bean oil rally, it's really all about the port price in Paranagua. If we've got bad quality, if we've got harvest delays, that port price should start to come up. It has been coming up the last 5 days. By my measurement, it's up about $15 a ton in the last 5 or 6 days. That's good. It's not going down anymore, but it's still about $25 a ton discount to the U.S. Gulf of Mexico price. It's interesting to note that right before we went on the air here to tape today's video, Reuters came out with their estimates for the Brazilian crop, and I was blown away that I think it was 12 of the 13 analysts polled were above 130 million metric tons for that crop. The average trade guess is just under 133. Some of the bigger names out there, like IHS Markit, who used to be Informa, who used to be Willard Sparks in the old days, they're at 136, I think, this week. So it says to me that we have a crop being grown out there. We can't get it in, and we don't know what the quality is. And it's interesting to point out that 3 million metric tons may not sound like a lot between 130 and 133, but that 3 million metric tons is 110 million bushels. That's essentially our carryover. So the job of the U.S. soybean market now, especially with March futures going into delivery, is if that Port Paranagua port price continues to go higher, our job is to ration demand, to not let any more beans out the door, because it's more likely that we have less than a 133 crop, but it's closer to what my estimate is, probably 129 and a half to 130. That's where my estimate is. So I think we're in a true demand rationing mindset again, as long as we stay delayed in harvest down there. And that Paranagua price really is everything to me, as long as that meal holds its technical support. Meal is the key to the funds. Meal is the key to the domestic demand and how much the crushers and the hog and poultry producers are willing to really bid up.
And one other quick thing on soybeans, all of those factors you mentioned, if that comes to fruition, I'm going to be curious to start seeing what those new crop contracts are going to do. November, January, I know March today, March 22, just below that $12 mark. So we're seeing some good levels there already.
You always bring up a huge point very briefly. This is why the bean-corn ratio is not breaking down. This is why we're not buying corn acres right now, is because the market's so nervous, to your point, exactly about those deferred contracts giving too much premium away, and all of a sudden we don't get that 90 million acres that USDA is promoting.
Yeah, definitely something to watch there. On the wheat side of the equation, real briefly, it seemed like wheat today pushed higher just with some of that cold Russian weather and some of the spillover from row crops. Is that what you saw today?
Yeah, and I think we finally came around and looked at these crop conditions. I was shocked, and I had some Illinois clients send me some pictures after the Monday afternoon crop conditions update that USDA gave us on a monthly basis right now, soon to be weekly basis once we break dormancy. But I can tell you, you know, I've told you how our crop has been and been hit and in really tough spot as we warm up, and it looks like we're going to be dry the next 7 to 10 days. So we may break dormancy by the time we get to mid-March at this stage of the game. And I had some clients send me some pictures from Illinois, because Illinois went from 65% good to excellent last month to 46%. And Kentucky was right there with them, not nearly as low, but still a 14-point drop in 1 month. So I thought that the bad crop was in the hard red wheat belt. Well, it is, but we've not got a great crop in the soft red wheat belt. And then you look at the winter wheat, like the white wheat up in North Dakota, they're good to excellent 16%. And they were at 83% a year ago. So I still think this wheat market's got a weather premium that's not been satisfied yet. And I've been talking to clients about, don't be shocked to see July hard red futures hit about 750 a bushel under the circumstances and conditions we're in right now, especially if that dollar doesn't come in and mess with us.
And I wonder as well if some acres go away from wheat here this spring to quarter beans, that could help drive that price even a little bit higher as well, Mike.
We're already there, I think, Jesse, just because of the condition of the crop, especially west of Hutchinson, Kansas. I had another client over the weekend take a crop tour out into west central Kansas, and he validated what I had been told, and pictures have been sent to me out in that Palco, Hayes, Zurich area towards the Colorado border. It's not a good crop, and I think we are going to lose some winter wheat acres, especially hard red wheat acres.
Let's switch over to livestock. I'm going to save cattle here for the end. I know you are a cattle guy and like to talk about that a lot, have a lot of knowledge there, but I want to start with hogs. And oh man, Mike, this hog market just does not show any signs of slowing down. A huge move today, up three in that April contract, 89.42. I mean, we're pushing 90 on all of these contracts now. you know, in these front months. This is just, I'm blown away with what's going on in the hog market right now.
Well, and this is the funds. And that's why when you feel blown away, it's usually the funds and the investors plugging it. And I think that's where we're at. We're at the pork and bean trade is back on. The funds are buying hogs, buying and beans as well. You know, Bloomberg broke a story earlier this week, Jesse. I think it meant a lot to the market. They broke the story about what we've been talking about, where the Chinese ASF is not going away. And that just says to the market, why did they release 20,000 metric tons of pork out of their reserves this week? Because they needed it. And because they, although the pork price has dropped a little bit, they're nervous it's going to spike again because we're coming back from Lunar New Year holiday. And they know that their production cycle is a little bit wobbly here. And they're probably not going to get a lot of animals until summer or late summer, early fall. So I think that's where the fundamentals are a material piece of the puzzle here. But I think the vast majority is the pork and bean trade and the fund investment. I think the cold storage numbers said a lot with we saw a buildup versus last month, but we're still down 26% versus last year. So it makes sense why, similar to the grains, any fundamental news, get any risk on trade news and inflation, hogs are a good bet. And I think that's where I still like being hedged in that mid 90s, 96, 97 area, getting up to that level in the June and July contract. I think it's kind of like $5.50 corn. Why wouldn't you hedge that every time you get up there over the course of the 20-year time period? You're going to come out well and you're going to be profitable. And that's all that counts at the end of the day.
Yeah, and that's a great point that it just seems like there is a lot of profit to be had here. And who knows? We don't know when the bottom could fall out of this hog market as well. I mean, it doesn't show any signs of doing it right now, but it's very possible it could happen.
No, and that's where the hedger doesn't want it to. You know, that's where the hedger and the speculator psychology of trading or risk managing, it's night and day because you would love to lock it. I'd love to lock in a $90 put floor, you know, get a $92 put for $2, lock in a $90 floor and say, who cares what happens? That to me is the ideal way to produce corn and raise animals.
Yeah. Let's move to cattle, Mike. This cattle market, you know, we struggled last week with the weather issues. We figured that starting to see a little bit of trade trickle into feedlot country here today. I know those feeders were up strong today, even with the modest move higher in the corn market. You know, fat cattle weren't too far behind. What's some takeaways you have with this cattle market right now?
There's a couple of things that I think have breathed some fresh air into the cattle market here, Jesse. I think the biggest thing was we are finding out how bad the Texas situation was in the cattle market because of the prices that we're seeing. And when I saw the Fed Cattle Exchange go 114 and a quarter today in Texas for Fed steers in a decent quantity, it said to me that these people are hurting and the buyers are willing to bid up, especially if Hedger's Edge's numbers are right about the beef margins being at $400 a head. The packers are bidding up now because they realize there's a limited supply coming out of certain states like Texas and Oklahoma for lack of a better, you know, reason. The other thing that really turned around this week that you and I've talked about is the stock market and the equities markets. People have to realize that on a 12-week running basis, lead month fat cattle and the S&P 500 have almost a 90% positive relationship with one another. They feed upon each other, in other words, and they track each other very, very closely. And it makes sense right now between the risk on inflationary mindset and also the wealth effect. So at the producer level and at the beginning of the supply chain level, I think you've got some supportive news that in an investor level, we support this market as well. What I'm still worried about is the retail side. The National Restaurant Association came out this week with some new reports of the family dining and casual dining. Offsite sales made up less than 20% of what they used to get on site or on premises for their gross revenue. Less than 20%. Well, I've been under the impression, I think the market's been under the impression, this offsite business has really helped the restaurants become viable again. It's not that. I think it's the PPP and some of the loans that they've been able to get just to survive. They're not making nearly what they need to make to be able to survive the circumstances. So we better open up pretty quickly is the answer in my mind. The other thing that really bothers me on the retail side is we continue to see USDA show the retail beef index really weak. Grocery stores are not featuring like they should, and pork and chicken continue to win out. So is April fat cattle at 122 today justified? Yeah, more than it was last week. I admit that. But is April 124, 125 still a good sale? And is June sales where we talked about last week still a good price to hedge? Yeah, I really think it is.
One other thing I'd like to ask you about, Mike, here before we wrap it up for today. Crude oil shooting up. Gas prices going up right now. A lot of that probably has to do with the Texas situation. But looking at that side of things, how much is that playing into our grain markets and livestock right now?
I talked to a really good client today that gave me some anhydrous prices, potash prices. I was blown away by the potash price. One bid was $350 a ton. The other bid was $395 a ton. That's about $100 to $150 more than you should be paying right now. And it really goes back to this cost push inflation that I started out the program with, Jesse. We aren't going to make nearly as much money on an inflation adjusted basis with these kind of input prices and input costs. And so I still stand there and say to myself, it's going to be hard to get 92 million corn acres unless we get closer to $5 in Dease corn. If the Nove beans can be above 12 bucks and running 12 and a quarter, makes no sense to me as a producer unless I'm doing rotation and I already had my field work done and already had my anhydrous bought last fall, why I would be pushing corn acres right now. So I think that story is still not one that we've written the final chapter on.
Well, Mike, great insight as always here again this week. And I know you have a lot of great resources on your website, globalcomresearch.com. That's globalcomresearch, com with two M's.com. And I know folks can go there, sign up for the newsletter and more, can't they?
Yes. And I'm going to start, I'm working on a welcome video because our new branch manager in Nashville, Kerry Heidish, is on board. He's going to start blog posting on the website. So you're going to get even more information than before. So appreciate you having me, Jesse.
Of course, anytime. Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics, our guest today here on Market Talk. Again, find him online, globalcomresearch.com. Find us online, markettalkag.com, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram as well. It's all at Market Talk Ag. This has been the Wednesday, February 24th edition of Market Talk. I'm your host, Jesse Allen, wishing you a great afternoon.